Welcome to the For the Reef podcast. Each week we bring our fish nerd conversations from the fish room floor to your living room. We try to bridge the gap between the saltwater aquarium hobby and coral reef conservation. Now, here are your hosts, fisheries biologist and founder of For the Reef Apparel, Mitch Dender, with local fish store owner and first responder, Ian Bell.
Oh, we're recording. We're live.
We're live.
I don't know where we're live to, but we're live. It didn't tell me.
Well, we're back for another episode of the For the Reef podcast. We're trying out a whole bunch of new things to try and bring you guys some better content here with this new streaming service and all of our different plans for sharing some tank tours and actually sharing more visuals during these podcasts. Well, we'll still be uploading the audio to all of the different places that you can listen to a podcast. We're also going to try doing these video recordings or live recordings to the different social media platforms so that people can actually see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this episode, Ian suggested that, you know, we spend some time actually describing and talking about the story of For the Reef as a clothing brand and as a, you know, a social enterprise. So I think that's what the plan is today, right, Ian?
Yeah, Mitch is going to talk about where it started and where it's going, which is going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. So as we've kind of briefly talked about it, you know, me and Ian have decided to kind of partner up a bit on this, on For the Reef, and kind of work together to try and, grow it as a brand and hopefully make a bigger impact and work a little more closely with the Cayman Eco Divers. So that's where we're at now. And I'll get more into that in a second here, but kind of going all the way back of what For the Reef is. And I'll just be really honest, the brand has went through a lot of different iterations and ideas. And as I've grown, the idea of For the Reef has kind of changed and grown. So when I first started For the Reef, I was in London, Ontario. So, you know, I was in landlocked Ontario, Southern Ontario, and, I was nowhere close to an ocean. I had a extreme passion for aquatic life and marine biology and freshwater biology. And, that's what I was doing as a career. As funny as this sounds, I was up there, I was living by myself. So me and my wife were living separate because she was trying to get into teachers college up in London. And I was working, so I had to take my job, and she was waiting to find out if she got into Western up there for teachers college. So I was by myself, so I didn't have a whole lot. I didn't have a whole lot going on. And I remember one day after work, and as pitiful as it sounds, I came home and I turned on that documentary. It's called Chasing Coral. And I remember sitting there, and it was like, you know, the end of the night. I was figuring out, oh, you know, I'll throw on something. You know, probably watch it for 10 minutes and fall asleep because I was exhausted from work because I was working a ton of hours back there, especially because I was up there by myself. And I ended up watching that documentary completely. And shed a few tears and had a few beers. And from that point, I kind of woke up that morning with this kind of sense of wanting to do something more. I knew through, you know, school and through talking to people and, I knew just as well as anybody that the coral reefs were suffering. And I knew that there had to be something that, you know, everybody could do. So that's kind of what led to For the Reef. And that's kind of the really core of how this happened was just kind of like a somebody who's just in the middle of landlocked Ontario and wanting to make an impact on the reefs. It's a saying that I like to say a lot is it doesn't matter where you live. You can impact the Reefs because no matter where you live, the Reefs are impacting you. I really find that to be true. Whether you find this information out from documentaries or you learn in school or somebody tells you or wherever you learn it, coral reefs control our atmosphere. They produce a massive amount of oxygen for the planet. They amount for the most biodiversity of any aquatic ecosystem. They're the backbone of a healthy planet. So when the coral reefs go away, it doesn't really matter where you live. If the coral reefs get wiped off this planet, this planet's going to look a lot different. And no matter where you are, whether you're in the middle of Ontario or on the coast of California, you're going to feel the impacts of losing that ecosystem. So that's kind of that initial reaction. Ian, have you ever seen Chasing Coral?
I have.
Yeah. So I just found it to be a really, really good, honest documentary.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many that come out now that frankly, I felt like there's a lot of drama that they put into them. They exploit some of the facts that they can to kind of suit the documentary. And I just found like Chasing Coral was just a really well done documentary. And it was at the point in my life and the time of day and everything else, just kind of the stars aligned. And it was like a light bulb moment that it was like, why am I just watching TV at night? Why don't I do something a little bit more fulfilling? So that's what happened. From that point, we had to, I had to go and figure out how was I going to generate income? What was I going to do? The original plan, to be honest, was I was going to try and raise a target of $20,000. And I was going to try and donate it to some cause. So whether I had no idea how charities worked. I had no idea really what a nonprofit was. I had no idea what social enterprise was. I really didn't have a clue what I was doing. I just had this idea that I was going to go and raise 20 grand and donate it somewhere or do something with it. So some of the original ideas was I was going to do drone surveys. I have a buddy who has a drone company that I was going to try and get involved with. And we would go and survey some reefs to try and give some time-lapse stuff to help in their conservation. I looked closely at the yellow tang program, the breeding program in Hawaii, and talked to that researcher out there. I'm embarrassed to forget what his name is right now. They really, started the captive breeding of yellow tangs. So that was the idea. And of course the initial reaction, like it is for most people when you need to start generating some money for a fundraiser, something's like, well, we'll sell t-shirts. So I got like 500 white awful t-shirts, with a weird logo. So if you go way back, and I wish I had that logo and I could show you guys what it is. How did I pull that logo up? Anyway, it was the old logo, and that old logo basically said it was the number 4, and then it said reef, and it looked like a fish, and no one really could read it. It didn't really make a whole lot of sense. So I was just selling those for 20 bucks, and then I was going to take that money and donate it. And I did donate. I ended up donating what I was able to sell to the Yellow Tang program. And then from there, it was the question of, okay, do I go to try and be a nonprofit, or should I go down the route of being a social enterprise? Ian, you know kind of the difference?
It's a little bit complicated, and I'm still trying to work my head around it myself. But as a social enterprise, I believe that it's still sort of a registered business under yourself. whereas a nonprofit is a separate entity that doesn't sort of make money.
Yeah. So
it's a very loose understanding.
Yeah. I've really dove into this a lot. And I just wanted to hear what your take was on it, because I think that there's a lot of confusion about like what all these different titles are. And I'm going to veer off the topic of like For the Reef as a brand for a second to kind of describe the difference between these two. But to kind of become a nonprofit in middle of Canada doing coral reef conservation, it wasn't the most practical thing. And then I started to look into, well, what are the other options? Social enterprise is another option. Social entrepreneurship basically is the idea that you take a for-profit business model and you tie doing good directly into the foundations of the company. So if you think of examples like 4Ocean right now is actually a for-profit company. A lot of people don't realize that. 4Ocean does ocean cleanup. So they sell you a bracelet, it's like $20, and they pull a pound of trash out of the ocean. In that model, they're doing good while generating revenues that will sustain the business so that they can do more. And then it grows on a level playing field. The more money you make, the more good you're doing. Another great example is Toms. For every shoe they sell, they will donate a pair to someone in need. The list goes on. There's a whole bunch of great social enterprises. And the value in that one is that to date, if you really look at the nonprofit model, we haven't been able to use it well enough to really make massive impacts that need to happen. I mean, there's some great examples of charities, and I'm not taking anything away from that, from the people. It's the model, really. I mean, if you think about it, writing a check for a charity, for a donation right at the end of the tax year from Nike or Walmart or whoever else, these big companies that decide, you know, okay, look at the good we're doing. We're going to write it off here, and then we'll write it off in the next year and blah, blah, blah. That model hasn't really worked. And I saw a really interesting stat where it said that, and I wish I had, was prepared, I could have pulled it up, but it was basically saying that if you were to take 1% of the total profits of the Fortune 500 companies in, I think this was like 2017 when I was looking up this stat, it would be able to like feed every single human on the planet for 30 years. It could end homelessness in all developed countries. It could do like massive things where it's like 1%. So let's just say all these huge, amazing companies that have reached Fortune 500, they take a tiny, tiny fraction of their business model and their revenues, and they would really be able to solve the problems that charities and nonprofits have been trying to solve by donations. Because unfortunately, the amount you can get from donations is limited by, you know, goodwill by people and that sort of thing. And, sometimes that well can run dry. And that's kind of the reason why I really believe in social entrepreneurship. You know, in our situation here, we have an incredible nonprofit partner in the Cayman Eco Divers that we want to support. We believe in them. And we build it right into the foundation of our company, where we try and generate revenue and we donate it. And that's our promise to our customers. So we try to provide them a product that they really like, provide them like a high quality product. This is what I feel is a high quality product that people actually want to buy. And then they go and they buy that product because they want it. And then in turn, they do good as kind of an extra, where it's a service-based thing. We can provide them with a service, and in turn, we get to do all the good that we wanted to do. So that's my long way of kind of explaining why For the Reef is a social enterprise. And so that's what led us to being a social enterprise. The other really easy thing to explain too, is that I was in the beginning mostly doing this by myself. My wife definitely helped in the beginning. But you know, for the most part, it was me trying to figure out how to do this. And the whole charity nonprofit route was just becoming too much for me to really go down that path anyway. So that's how we got here. So now we've got this business model here where we want to create an impact on the reefs, and we're going to sell clothes and we're going to be a social enterprise. So, well, what about the impacts of clothes? So Ian, before I ever told you about microfiber pollution, did you ever hear about it?
I probably did, but I wasn't aware to any great extent.
Yeah. And so there's a, everybody kind of knows what the impacts of plastics are. But a lot of people don't realize that the majority of plastics that are in the ocean, when I say the majority, I mean like the vast majority of plastics in the ocean are not plastic straws or cups or things like that. They're microplastics. So they're plastics that have been broken down. I think the official definition is like less than 5 millimeters in length. And they've been broken down to a point where in some cases they're almost invisible. So there's pictures online that you can find where you'll have one jar and it'll be filled with plastic that you'd see like caps and straws and things like that. It's obvious it's filled with plastic. And then there's another bottle that's clear. And in that bottle is microplastics. So that's a problem. And one of the main contributors of microplastic pollution in the world comes from clothing and textiles, and in particular fleece. So when you think of, when I'm talking about microplastics, I'm talking about polyester, acrylic, nylon, those types of things. So those plastics are shredded down, they're spun into fibers, and they're used in our clothes. And they provide some good in clothes. There's no question about it. I mean, I'm not saying that it's all bad. And in a lot of clothing types, microplastics aren't going to really leave the clothing very much. For example, if you take a nylon jacket and you wash it, those fibers aren't going to leave the jacket. If you take a t-shirt and you put it in a washing machine and compare it to the microplastics that would come out of a fleece sweater, you know, it's way, way more. And to kind of backtrack a bit, what happens here is that these fibers that are in your clothing, you put them in the washing machine and they escape your washing machine. They go down into the pipes. They're small enough to pass by our water treatment centers, and they end up in the Great Lakes. They end up in the ocean. Once they're there, plastic, as any plastic is, has these really, really hard carbon-carbon bonds. Bonds that typical bacteria that you find out in the ocean and bacteria, they won't be able to break those bonds. They won't be able to separate the bonds and break down these plastics. So in theory, these plastics will be around forever. In certain cases forever. In some cases, you know, they might get broken down by UV light and other things, but there's no real like natural way of breaking down a plastic once it's suspended in water. To make things even worse, once they're in the water, they have a high affinity to bind to pollutants. So oils, gases, and everything else that's floating around in the water, free floating through the water column, can bind to these plastics. Those plastics can end up in fish gills. They can end up in fish gut. They can end up on coral polyps. They end up everywhere. And, you know, they cause impacts to the organisms that they are going into. And then eventually they bioaccumulate up into us. And all that's doing is, you know, bringing all those toxins. And not only that, you're having plastic in your body, which is like, you don't have to go into too much detail of why that's bad, but it's bad.
I actually was just reading a news article yesterday. I'll post it, but there's a study that just came out that has well, it's kind of gross, but examined the stool in various people, and it's determined that there's some link between microplastics and irritable bowel syndrome.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense, right? Like, you have something in your body that your body or no bacteria can break down. So what is it doing? Who knows? There are some studies that show that you can pass them and they'll pass through your body. There's others that show that they don't. I don't want to eat plastic all day. I don't want to drink it. I don't want to eat it. I don't want to end up in a poop. So that's kind of what that's the impacts of microplastics. So I want to do a clothing company, but as a way of generating revenues so that we can, you know, make our social impacts. How the hell are we going to make fleece that doesn't contribute to microplastics? Show me another sweater other than ours that doesn't have some type of microfiber in it. Sure, you can get 100% cotton, or the only other options are 50-50 blends, polyester and cotton, or you get the acrylic blends with a little bit of acrylic in there, or you get a little bit of rayon with polyester and a little bit of cotton. But there's none, you know, it's very, 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 very hard to replicate what we have here. And what we have is 70% bamboo, so rayon from bamboo, and 30% organic cotton. And our bamboo is unique in the way that it doesn't, it's not chemically treated. So in the process of creating those bamboo fibers for clothing, in some cases, they will chemically treat the bamboo to kind of break it down from a petroleum base. Not great for your health. It'll also technically is creating a semi-plastic fiber. What ours is mechanically pressed. So it's done through mechanical processes, so it doesn't have that chemical treatment. So there is no microplastic pollution when you wash our sweaters. And from my perspective, that's great. So that's kind of where we've ended up, where we started to sell these things. Today, you know, I'm really proud to say that we, you know, my original goal was to donate 20 grand to nonprofits. And as of last year, we did donate, you know, over $20,000 Canadian. Most of the money went to a nonprofit called C-Corp International. If you've never heard of C-Corp, they do sexual coral reef propagation. So basically they allow the corals to spawn in the water column. They capture the gametes. They allow those gametes to settle over structures, little substrates that they call them. And then they distribute them onto the reef and allow them to regrow. I'll share my screen here and show you guys kind of a visual of what I'm talking about instead of just blabbing. Okay, so I am sharing my screen. Nice. So this is our website, if you've never been here. 50,000, over 50,000. We're now up to over 20 in Canadian. These are American dollars that we show on the website because most people speak in American. this is, if we go over here. So these guys here, that's C-Corp International. That is a donation from the Niagara Coral Show. And these guys really are great. And I will never say anything bad about what they are accomplishing there. I'm proud of what we were able to achieve together, primarily in the Caribbean, in Curacao, and planting over 5,000 corals out there on their coral substrates. So that was really good. Going forward, as they scale with size, you know, they're starting to work with some really big, you know, funders, much bigger than us, you know? So, in that case, we ended up to go and reach out to Ian, and Ian has introduced us to the Cayman Equidivers, and that's where we are now. We're we met Aaron Hunt there at Cayman Equidivers, and he and his wife run the Equidivers. I'm really losing my mind here. Aaron's wife's name is
Brittany.
Yeah, sorry. Aaron and Brittany are out there running the Cayman Equidivers, and I've talked about this before. But they, I think, at a grassroots level, they kind of really pulled me in, because I'm just a guy who's just trying to do some good. And when I talk to them, I just feel a lot of passion. I feel like what they're doing isn't out of any other reason but that they just wanted to do some good. And they have that grassroots, you know, they get it where we're coming from. And
they're making strides. They're actually making headway, and they're hoping to take what they're doing to other islands in the Caribbean and share their successes. So
yeah.
I think it was something where it was just a good fit, because it's not just a corporation that we hand a check to. We can be involved on all levels.
Mm-hmm.
And they're excited to have us. So I think that it was just a good fit all around.
Yeah. And I mean, and this is really diving into some of the details here, but like, Ian, me and you have talked about this, you know, offline, where I've said, I really love selling sweaters. And I really love running this company and trying to do it this way, where we're sending donations and doing anything. But at the end of the day, I'm also a biologist myself, and I feel like I can offer, you know, a lot to be kind of hands on, and that's what I really want to do. I want to see it. I want to be a part of it. And I want to get back into the water and hands on. And COVID's really messed that up. And I think it's just a great fit all the way around. And I'm really, really excited for the future to be working now with you. With the Equidivers, and we have so many big things coming for the reef that I'm really excited about. You know,
large opportunities have been presented to us, and we're excited to move forward with it.
Yeah, I mean, me and Ian aren't the most social media savvy people on the planet, but we've met some people who are, and they, you know, they want to be a part of this mission too, and. Mm-hmm.
There's some possibilities of some well-known brands out there that are maybe going to jump on, and we can't say anything yet because none of that's for sure. But if that goes, that could be a really exciting thing. So there's some stuff in the works.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, this is still and will always be a passion project. So every single time something like this happens, you know, like I said before, so this is a social enterprise, and it's a for-profit. This is still 100% passion, and it's all for the reefs. That's the goal. It's always been the goal. Nothing about that has ever changed. All of this scaling up that we're doing doesn't have to do with, we want to create more revenue so that we can put more money in our pockets or anything like that. This is 100%, you know, this is what brings us energy in our lives to work on this kind of stuff. And that's why we're doing it. So Don't worry,
we make time to do this because we think it's important.
Yeah. So that's kind of the thing there. I noticed another really cool thing that happened with For the Reef. And, you know, if you're new to For the Reef, you may not have known this, but, I think it was last year we were featured in National Geographic's, Travelers Magazine, as one of their kitless reef safe products. So that was a really cool moment. That's kind of what we got going on here. We have some different things.
We have a few new products we're planning to bring out, different designs, some old designs we're going to bring back.
Yeah.
And we're hoping to also add in some, for example, Equidiver specific designs, probably some rash guards and sweatshirts and things like that for them as well.
Yeah. I mean, we just got through Christmas, so we've got some sold out stuff on here, but we got to bring some new products in that I think will be awesome. We do offer the Cayman Eco Divers Reef Foundation Challenge going, just like Ian does. Those are all, that's all what we have here. We have our blog series where we go through everything I just kind of explained to you about our sweaters and why they're epic. And
they're pretty comfortable. I had two, and I have to say had because they both reside in my wife's closet now.
Yeah.
She's wearing one right now, actually. I'll never see it again.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if this is something you're into, then feel free to check out the website. Of course, we posted our podcast here. That's kind of the story of For the Reef in a nutshell, I'd say.
Just wanted to touch base with you guys and let you know that that's the most direct way that you can help us help our cause at the moment. And there's a lot of interesting and exciting things to come in the months ahead here from that.
Yeah. I mean, my, you go and look at all the other ocean brands, right? Usually the founders are running on the beach somewhere and picking up a piece of plastic from their backyard. And they're like, I lived here my whole life and I want to make a difference. And that's incredible. Like, I wish that was me. It's not. And I think that's the case for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people live in areas where we're not near the ocean, and a lot of people, their first realization that they're passionate with this is staring at it in a glass box. And that's what happened for me. I got my first fish tank when I was 10 years old, and it changed my life literally. So, you know, and like, if anybody's wondering, that's a milk jug that's sitting in the fish tank right now. That's a DIY fish trap. I got a long nose hawk fish in there right now that, doesn't like peppermint shrimp. And I also have some aptasia. So I'm trying to get the hawk fish out of there so I can finally deal with these aptasia. But, that's the story, you know, FTR.
Very good. We got some interesting new guests too. We had a another agency reach out to us, and it looks like that's going to go ahead. And I don't know if you want to touch on that, Mitch.
I mean, I guess we can say it. It's the Invasive Species Center in Ontario here has reached out coming on the podcast and stuff. So they know, you know, from an invasive species perspective, it'll be a really, really interesting conversation, because there are impacts on our planet from the aquarium hobby and in invasive species, in the invasive species world. Right now, in my opinion, one of the worst invasive species in the areas around where I live is goldfish. Main way goldfish get into the Great Lakes is from people who have a goldfish bowl and then they don't want to take care of it anymore, but they don't want to just euthanize it. So they bring it and they throw it into the creek close by their house. And now we have goldfish everywhere. The mystery snail, another freshwater snail that's in our area, the Asian mystery snail, it completely covers culverts and spawning grounds that central mud minnows and sticklebacks and all these different fish that they need. And can't forget that we do have some native snail species, and most of those ones are this big, and Eurasian mystery snails are about this big, and they're really aggressive, and they can live in any environment, and they consume vegetation. So they come into areas and they gobble up all the vegetation, and they leave, you know, oxygen dead zones. And then you go into these little creeks that you think should be full of fish, and they're just full of these snails. So that's probably what we're going to dive into. And I'm really, you know, I'm not an invasive species expert, and I'm really excited to bring hopefully one of their people onto the show who can kind of elucidate this a lot better than I can.
Yep, and we'll probably reach out and have, you know, some of the lionfish people from the Caribbean there on at some point and have them talk about that.
Yeah.
Well, it's all about responsible reef keeping and aquarium keeping. It's not that you shouldn't have an aquarium, but you should do it responsibly. You wouldn't just, you know, I hope you wouldn't let some, you know, venomous snake free in the world.
Yeah. You know, you got the lionfish. There's plecos. I'm sure you've seen videos online of plecos in Florida. It'll be fun. That's something I'm really looking forward to. I know we don't get these podcasts out as much as we should, because of timing, but we're trying. We got all this new stuff that's in the works now. We've kind of organized ourselves a little better as far as using this platform. And if you like what we're doing here, it means the absolute world to us when we just hear it from you. If you like it, if you have suggestions, if you think my audio sucks, if I say too much, say whatever you want. We just like any interaction that you guys have for us. It really makes this feel like it's worth it.
Things you want to know more about, people that you'd like us to try and get a hold of, mm-hmm. we're open to suggestions.
Yeah. And of course, always find us on the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, For the Reef's got TikTok account now. you can find us on there, For the Reef or Sustainable Marine Canada. Cayman Eco Divers is on there as well. You can reach us at fortherieffpodcast@gmail.com, or you can just contact us through any of those other platforms, and we'll be able to get back to you. So is there anything else you kind of wanted to cover on this one?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a short one today. We just wanted to get one out and say we're still around. It's just been a bit hectic before Christmas here. And
we have a really great tank tour.
The tank tour.
Yeah. So we want to make this kind of part of our show now, where it's not just the audio. Even though I love listening to podcasts when I'm driving and stuff like that, we also want to like actually show some stuff, and now we have the ability to do it. So we're thinking of doing some tank tours where we'll do some virtual tours of people's tanks, and we can ask questions and we can have our discussions and make this maybe a little bit more interactive for everybody. Mm-hmm. So if that's something you want to see, if you have a tank that you want to be on the show and to do a tank tour, me and Ian don't know everything, but I mean, this guy owns a fish store, so there's got to be something up in that brain.
We're going to try and do some little mini tours on some of the builds that I'm doing as they progress and stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you want proof that Ian knows what he's talking about, you should see these tanks, because they are spectacular. I mean, to be realistic, the guy who set up this tank, it wasn't me. I was just there. Eating pizza behind him while he was setting it up. So anyway, that will, that's probably a good place to end off. Appreciate the support, everybody. And till next time.
See you later.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the For the Reef podcast. As always, you can reach us at fortheriefpodcast@gmail.com or via our websites, fortherief.com or sustainablemarinecanada.ca. If you would like to get involved and help the reef restoration efforts, check out our friends at caymanecodivers.com. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please hit subscribe and join us for the next episode coming soon.